We welcome Reverend David Billings to our pulpit. He is a man of many talents with a lifelong commitment to working against racism. He was born in Mississippi, grew up in Arkansas. He has been an anti-racist trainer and organizer since the early 80s. He earned a Doctor of Ministry and is recognized throughout the country and beyond for his work, his lifetime work of leadership, speaking, and writing on the subject of race. David is the author of the book recently published, Deep Denial, that many of us have been reading and discussing in the past months. And as one critic said, no one speaks of racism and its cure better than David, a white Southerner who has seen it all. His voice needs to be heard. It is a voice with perfect pitch. Today we welcome Reverend David Billings to our UU pulpit.
Acknowledges months like the one just read, you know. Sometimes I feel like, well, I must have written that, you know, about me. Who else would think of that? But I love being here. Chestertown is now something quite regularly in our lives because of Nathan and Brittany Schroyer. And now that Ben Cole is here, who is a friend of many years now since we first started working in New York City in 2004. And so we're just glad to be here among you. And the spirit that exudes from your worshiping together is just really wonderful and very inspiring. Carrying the songs, you know, it's wonderful. We have a lot of old friends. Phil, you're here, and Annie, thank you so much for leading us in worship. I wrote Deep Denial because after so many years of working against racism, sometimes it seems like we haven't made any progress at all, you know? And often there's this white backlash that occurs in this country, not consciously all the time, but in fact keeps white supremacy in place. It's a word that a lot of us are not familiar with because we've been taught that that refers to the hate groups. White supremacy is more than that, you know, and it's that silent undergirding of the Republic. You know, you might do great work, might have worshiped in different ways to confront racism, but it becomes an individual matter. And often we don't do that. We change our head, but not always our heart. And so I wanted to write a book largely for white people, you know, that this is done in our name. We can deny it, but we benefit from it, you know. And I wanted to be honest about that. So I wrote a book, each chapter prefaced by a story from my own life, growing up in the South, and particularly in Mississippi and Arkansas, and Macomb, Mississippi, the little town where I was born. Marjorie and I lived there once again in the house that my grandfather had built and was a part of FDR's New Deal. And so we were able to buy a house at 2% interest over a 30-year period. And it became the foundation stone of the wealth that we now have. It was never talked about. It was always assumed. But if you could, if you were African American, as we say now, black, You weren't allowed to even bid on the property, much less live in it. So I wanted to face up to that, because the benefits that we have, regardless of what we've done, as far as it's just really incredible, and it needs to be acknowledged that all of that is based on the fact that we are white in a white established nation. The invention of whiteness, as many of you know, we weren't always called white, but the founders of this nation were worried. How is a small group of European descent going to build a nation? Who's going to build it? You know, it was like that joke from, which is really not a joke, given, I think, Steve Carell or one of the late nighters, talking about the wall that the president wanted to build on the southern border. And then both of them, whoever his partner was on that evening, they stopped a second and said, "Well, who's going to build it?" You know? The very people we wanted to keep out. You know? And it drove home a message. Powerful, because we have built the wealthiest country in the history of humankind. Let's think about that. But we built, again, as you know, on the land of the indigenous and on the toil of the African. And that has created tremendous wealth. But we're not taught that as white people. So we resent the fact that we were a part of this. And we deny it. Well, I walked with Dr. King, or, you know, I've been there doing the right thing as much as I could, which is true. And so have we, and many of you in this room. But it still does not help us understand the psychology of people who become white. The fact that we have deep down, even as our activism might belie it, deep down we understand too often that this country is ours. You know, you won't admit it, won't say it out loud, but this country was made for the white man, as we say. And to not ever be taught that helps us live life with a mindset that we've worked hard for everything we have, that no one ever gave us nothing, you know. And most of the time, you know, we don't know where we're standing, and we don't know what we've received, you know, to become a part of the benefits of whiteness. Last year, Marjorie took a book tour all over the nation. We did about 100 different presentations. I talked about the same thing, you know. I had some learnings from that tour. One, this country has a lot of good people in it. People who, you know, went out of their way to make us feel at home, to try to make sure that they were more conscious than they were maybe before, of structural racism. Most of us deal with racism on the personal level, you know. But racism is not just personal. It's structural. It's built in the very fabric of this life. That's why all of the outcomes of the nation's arrangement. White people are on the top, you know. People of color, particularly African people. This nation has a thing about blackness. We will deny it. We'll say it ain't so. It is so, you know. And everything in this country's history demonstrates that. Now, that's not something to run away from. You run towards it. You know, you embrace it. When my uncle was killed in Mississippi, as I start the book, and the fact that even as when the Klan came to the house, and my Uncle James, as I relate in that story, as he went around the circle, saying, "What would you have us do?" This was the Klansman. And my Uncle James, who had been to World War II, who had seen death and destruction in an enormous way, he said, "We don't want you to do nothing. We're not that kind of family." And at that moment, I let the sigh go. And I said, "I'm going to find out about this racism business. What is it? Why is it? You know, how did it start? Who did it start with? What does it mean to be white? You know, to have no sense of, in my case, of my ancestry." You asked me back then, up until this day, "Well, what were you before you became white?" My only truthful answer is that I can't imagine not being white. You know, we didn't have a strong ethnic tradition. But it did have a beginning point, and it did have a history to it. You know, and that history was structural in nature, not personal. You know, a lot of us have prejudices and feelings and everything. Yes, that's one of the byproducts of a race-constructed society. But it's the structural phenomena of race that covers and highlights our life. Where do, you know, where do our houses come from? Where do all the different structures, the university? You imagine if you were a child in the late, well, even today, and you were getting an education at some of the great universities, let's say, you know, but that education for so many hundreds of years in much of our arrangement was for whites only. But since we were never taught, we always assumed, you know, other things that didn't further what we call race relations in this country, but as the bedrock of white supremacy. White supremacy is not hooded. It is not, you know, it's not something outside of our own experience. It's something built into the arrangement of society so that if you keep us and our children and our grandchildren ignorant of that nation's history, we can't change it, you know. And if white folks, such as myself, such as you for the most part, if we don't understand it, then we pass on another generation of it. You know, we don't do the hard work of saying, "Now, how did we benefit from this arrangement?" Again, one of the learnings of the book tour was that we don't know history. And if you don't know history, you can't understand this nation. You know, whites have a way of just, history begins when I become conscious of it. But history goes way back, you know, and that history is designed not to make life easy, but to make life easier, you know. But if I'm not taught that, then I can live in a state of denial, as the psychologists like Ben and others in this room, you know, taught us way back, that it's the mindset that keeps us imprisoned. It is the lack of history and a lack of understanding of history. You know, it's for many of us, history begins when we were born. But white supremacy began long before that. But we are not taught that. And you might be lucky and have a teacher who dares go in that direction. I had some. I had great mentors. You know, when you were singing some of the hymns, I woke up this morning with my mind, "Stayed on Freedom." That was a song of the Civil Rights Movement. The background of the song is that it was very much resisted what it wants to happen. And you had to fire up the troops every morning to get them to walk a little bit further amid very dangerous times. So I woke up this morning with my mind stayed on freedom. You had to, because you're very likely to going to get beaten down during the day. So we keep fighting this evil, but we don't necessarily fight it with our eyes wide open to all of the various ways that history is built on the establishment of a white supremacist state. That's an ugly term. That's an ugly history when it comes to race. And it's not just the haters. It's not just those who might politically speak about such things. It's those of us who have quizzed and asked, what do you know white supremacy to be? Are you for it or against it? We'd say, I'm against it. And of course you are. Depends on what the question is. But the fact that we have not understood what it means keeps holding our nation hostage. We're hostage makers and takers in this country. So this book, Deep Denial, has sparked some interest nationwide. Study groups have formed. College professors now require reading. And I had to spend a lot of money to make them do that. But it's interesting how much this structural racism is a part of our nation's history. There were other things that learned on the trip. Is that most of us, we don't know when we came to be called white. Maybe a few of you do, but most of us, what do you mean white? What does that mean? All of a sudden I'm back in my ethnicity. We're Irish. And yeah, before, after you're Irish. When did you become white? Why? Did you get to, vote on it? Or did the nation just, took you under its wing? So deep denial is a call for us to create an atmosphere and a place for those of us called white to acknowledge racism and white supremacy and how we came to be that in this nation. And how that pulls us back, and it's a constant state of denial. Racism, that's in poor white people, it's not. It's all of us who are called white, and we need to understand that and organize against that reality if the nation is ever going to change. But if you've been active, as some of you have been, with the girders of the underpinning of white supremacy, whether it's our schools, our hospitals, doesn't matter what it is, how that history of race prejudice became the power to institute white supremacy. And we have to know that. We can't be absolved. No pope is going to call us and say, "You are now absolved of all your sins." Doesn't work like that. But it does work, and we need to know it if we're going to disrupt it. So that those learnings from this book tour were very interesting. I grew a lot during it. I got very tired, because it was one after another after after another of, you know, talks like this around the country. It gave you a sense of hope, you know, but the hope depends on our ability to name it and claim it, you know. Most of us want somebody else to do that, not ourselves. So I commend you here in Chestertown and, you know, what's the county? Kent County, Queen Anne, this county, all over. You have a very active anti-racist movement. And we've got a lot to make up for, but it's very hopeful that those organizers, you know, are determined to uproot it so that there was a chance that we can create a populace that has equity as much as it is possible to create equity in this society. We've got to do it. One little town after another, one big city after another, you know, one profession after another. If all of us who were part of professions, if we stood up and we said, we don't want there to be, you know, prejudice in the training of a doctor, you know, in the training of a teacher. That's left up to the individual right now. But what if it becomes a part of the arrangement? That you're not going to be a doctor in this society unless you understand what has happened in the name of that science over the years. You know, unless we can understand that for much of this nation's history, those of us who teach the children of color were not being taught in the same way. And so you go one institution, one system at a time, and, you know, theoretically you could undo racism. We've never reached there in this society. It's always, you know, one or two people here, one or two white people there. And so we've not yet achieved what we want. But we stand with hope. People's Institute, which Marjorie and I and Ben and Nathan are a part of, the Brittany, we think that if racism was done, it can be undone. There's a structural reality, and we can structure something differently. Not overnight, just because we say we would like that, but we dedicate ourselves to that, you know, in the same way that we overcame cancer in this country. I'm struck by the percentage of Americans that smoke in mid-50s and everything, but now it's largely outlawed, and, you know, the nation is better for it. So just know that the undoing of racism, the dismantling of white supremacy, taking our interest from the personal to the structural, you know, that we can begin to open up new vistas for all of the population. These are hard times, and I'm going to end on this. These are hard times in America. Many of us believed that we had fought this battle about voting rights, and we had fought this battle about, you know, fair and equitable having to do with where we live and who gets funded and who doesn't. But we got to fight it again, you know, like some of the greats. Ann Braden was a white woman. Anyone ever heard her name? You know, she should be on a coin of some type. She's a white woman that in Louisville, Kentucky, with her husband Carl, refused to limit potential buyers of their home and opened it up to whoever, and then arranged for a black family to in fact buy their house. Was, you know, Carl was accused of sedition, traitor, you know, because he fought, you know, and Anne, all of his life, she outlived Carl for many years, but she never, on the day she died, she was organized. You know, she was speaking out against what she knew was the great unknown. Is how can we wake white people up to, as a group, white people up, how we wake them up and realize the very ideals we stand for are thwarted by this arrangement of power and purpose. This country. One more thing. That when the founders of this nation, they just marched six white men. You know, we get those six, and the rest of us say, "Well, we've done it. We're through with it." No, they built it so that after generation and generation of white people would follow. You know. There's a huge history of how the founders of this country particularly targeted poor white people and said, we need them to protect the arrangement that we're building. We gotta make sure that poor white people don't join up with others, you know, and defeat this experiment in democracy before it ever begins. So there's been this tug ever since of how do you organize all the components of society on a racial basis so that we begin to educate ourselves and will to our grandchildren and their grandchildren a different nation from that which we inherited. Thank you very much, folks.